United States Steel, USS, the industrial family that serves the nation, presents the Theater Guild on the air. Our star, Gertrude Lawrence, the play, The Last of Mrs. Cheney, produced on the air tonight by the Theater Guild, one of America's foremost theatrical producers. Every day, everywhere, you are served by products of steel. In your home, in your business, in your travel. And when you see on any product the trademark of United States Steel, USS, you know the steel is good. And now, direct from the stage of the Vanderbilt Theater in New York, the United States Steel Corporation invites you to listen to The Last of Mrs. Cheney. And here is Roger Pryor for the Theater Guild to say a word about our play and our players.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As you know, it's always been the purpose and intention of the Theater Guild on the air to bring you all the excitement and glamour of an opening night on Broadway. No one can convey this feeling of expectancy better than Gertrude Lawrence, whom we bring to you this evening. But we all feel that the presence of this gracious comedian adds an additional luster to Frederick Lonsdale's ever-popular comedy, The Last of Mrs. Cheney. Miss Lawrence has recently been seen on Broadway and is currently on tour with the revival of George Bernard Shaw's Pygmalion. Tonight, Miss Lawrence is most ably supported by Ralph Forbes as Charles and Bramwell Fletcher as Lord Dilling.
No, my dear. You can't get me to go to a charity concert.
But, Willie, darling, Mrs. Cheney is giving it at her home.
I hate charity concerts. Mrs. Cheney is giving it?
Yes, darling.
I love charity concerts.
That was Willie Winton and his wife, but it might have been anyone in London. For that was the season when everyone wanted to meet Mrs. Cheney. That's why everyone who was invited came to Mrs. Cheney's beautiful garden to her charity concerts. And all the best-known people of London they were, too. Charles the butler explains this to George the footman.
Right now, out in the garden, George, listening to the blooming piano, we have what may be known as the social goods.
Crowd of swells, all right.
Exactly. Now, there's Lady Maria Frinton, if one can stretch a point and call her a lady. There's Lady Joan Houghton, a woman who swears like a trooper, calls a spade a ruddy shovel and means it.
I like her. But that old one with the painted face and the pearls.
Ah, the woman with the pearls. That's Mrs. Ebley. It is said of her that seated in her chair one day, looking into her mirror, she spied a double chin. At that moment, the last of many lovers called to pay his respects. Looking into that mirror and without flinching, she said, "I am not at home."
Ah, good for her. But who's the tall bloke that drove her here?
Lord David Elton, a rich, eligible bachelor. To have got him here today, George, was a triumph. He so seldom goes anywhere.
What do you think brought him here?
Your employer, Mrs. Cheney.
Oh, she's a knockout. I guess him and that Lord Dillon fellow will have to fight a duel.
Oh, Charles.
Yes, Lady Joan.
Who the devil told that woman out there that she can play the ruddy piano?
Her music teacher, milady, when he found that she had the money to pay for lessons in advance.
Hello, Joan.
Hello, Mariah. Come sit down.
What horrible music out there. Charles, can I have some tea, please?
Yes, milady. Come, George.
Right. Isn't he divine?
Who?
Charles.
My dear Joan, he's the butler.
And the most attractive man here.
All the men are interested in Mrs. Cheney, and all the women in her butler.
Isn't Mrs. Cheney a darling? So chic. But, Mariah, you don't really think she'd marry a prig like Elton, do you?
Well, the widow of a rich Australian might find that being Lady Elton would have certain advantages.
That's true.
Well, it's all very amusing. Elton is a charity concert, and of all people in the world, Arthur Dilling. What's he doing out of bed before 4 in the afternoon?
Trying to impress Mrs. Cheney and having a very little luck.
Yes, and when a woman refuses Arthur, that's news.
And when a woman prefers Elton to Arthur, that's an astigmatism. Hello, Arthur. Are your ears burning?
No, but I am. A whiskey and soda, quick.
What's the matter, Arthur?
Oh, he
Here is your tea, milady.
Oh, thank you, Charles.
And here is your whiskey and soda, Lord Dilling.
Now, how did you know I wanted a whiskey and soda?
I tried to anticipate the wishes of the guests, sir.
You're priceless, Charles. Do you know everything, except the one thing I want you to remember.
Where we have met before?
Exactly. Have you been able to recall it?
No, sir. I really believe you're mistaken, sir.
Oh, no, I'm not. You'll try to remember, won't you, Charles?
I'll try very hard, sir.
Now, what does that odd conversation mean?
It means I've seen that fellow somewhere before, and I'd like to know where.
I think you're trying to curry favor with the butler so that his employer will favor you.
Small chance of that.
Oh, you think Elton is going to marry Mrs. Cheney?
If his solicitor and his mother both give their consent.
Why don't you marry her?
What?
Marry. You know, it's an English word. Would you like a dictionary?
Arthur will never marry. He could never make any woman happy for more than a year.
You're quite an optimist, Joan.
Mr. Still, it would be fun to cut Elton out, wouldn't it?
Unfortunately, Elton has cut me out.
Uh-huh. So that's why you needed strong drink.
Exactly. I was talking with Mrs. Cheney in the garden when up came Elton, as cool as you please, took her arm and led her into the library. They're in there now, and I don't like it.
Why did you ask me to come in here to the library, Lord Elton?
My dear Mrs. Cheney, I didn't like to see you talking to Lord Dilling.
Oh, you mean Arthur?
Well, I'm sorry you're intimate enough with him to call him by his first name. He's a very dangerous man.
Oh, dangerous. I find him quite tender.
That's exactly what I mean.
Oh, then you'd warn me away from anyone who was tender towards me.
Well, no, not exactly.
I had hoped that you were tender towards me.
Oh, Mrs. Cheney, I am. I am. That is why I want to warn you against Lord Dilling.
Lord Elton, tell me, can I feel perfectly safe with you?
I've told you how I feel towards you, Mrs. Cheney. Of course you're safe with me.
That's very gratifying. And yet, you know, I'm puzzled.
Puzzled? Why?
Well, you feel tender towards me, and so I'm safe with you. Lord Dilling feels tender towards me, and that makes him dangerous. Can you explain that, please?
But you don't understand. Lord Dilling's tenderness is not like mine. It's different.
Lord Elton, I've caught you. Do you know what I think?
No.
I think you're just as dangerous as Lord Dilling.
Oh, Mrs. Cheney, that's the nicest thing any woman ever said to me.
I'm so glad.
I think you're just wonderful. You don't know how I've been looking forward to seeing more of you this weekend at Mrs. Ebley.
Oh, you're going there?
Yes, because you are.
Oh.
But you know, I don't think you should go.
No, why not?
Oh, well, for example, have you noticed the pearls Mrs. Ebley's wearing?
I certainly have. Any woman would.
They're vulgar.
Well, they're big, anyhow.
They're typical of this whole set of frivolous people. I want to warn you against them.
I beg your pardon, Mrs. Cheney.
Oh, yes, Charles.
Lord Dilling has asked me to tell Lord Elton the audience is eagerly awaiting his speech, and that he is the most eager of them all.
Thank you.
Shall we go, Lord Elton?
Yes.
Yes, Mrs. Ebley?
I'm afraid I must leave now.
Oh, but you've missed Lord Elton's speech.
Well, that's why I'm leaving. Now, you're not going to disappoint me. You were coming to my house for the weekend?
Oh, of course I am.
Oh, good. They're waiting for you to introduce Lord Elton. I'll run. Goodbye, dear. Goodbye.
Goodbye, goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, or perhaps I should say friends, not that you're not ladies and gentlemen, of course. I want to thank you for coming here, not on my behalf alone, but on behalf of the musicians and the charity which will benefit from this concert. I have prevailed upon Lord Elton to tell you something about that charity. Lord Elton.
Thank you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I am sure we're all very grateful to Mrs. Cheney for giving this concert for the benefit of the Milk Fund of West Clapham. Mrs. Cheney, a stranger in our midst, is the sort of woman who discovers these little-known charities and works generously to help them. We all know, of course, that there is no worthier beverage than milk.
Hear, hear.
Speaking as a prohibitionist, let me point out that milk has never broken up a home. There is a moral, perhaps, in this fact. Milk makes us think of babies. Babies make us think of mothers. Mothers make us think of womanhood at its most supreme. And who
enjoying
among
speech?
Us represents...
You, Cheney, you should be out there. You suggested that he make it.
So I could show you what an ass he is.
I think he's very amused.
Exactly.
Milk Mrs. Cheney. And so I propose a toast to this noble woman. And because of the charity involved, I ask that you drink it with milk. To Mrs. Cheney, may this stranger in our midst remain in our midst forever.
Hello, Charles.
Lord Dilling.
Still here, sir? Why, I believe I am. Did you enjoy the musicale, Charles?
To be frank, sir, I stayed indoors and avoided it. I did hear the violinist, however. Was she an amateur?
At the violin, yes.
Ah.
Charles, have you remembered yet where we met?
We have never met, milord.
No? Tell me, Charles. How long have you been with Mrs. Cheney?
Mrs. Cheney engaged me 6 months ago next Tuesday in a registry office near Brook Street. To be her butler, my lord.
So you were not with Mrs. Cheney in Australia?
Has Mrs. Cheney ever been to Australia, Lord Dilling?
Didn't you know Mrs. Cheney came from Australia?
How should I, my lord? Mrs. Cheney would never think of discussing her affairs with servants.
You're quite right, Charles.
Hello, I thought you'd gone.
Why?
All the others have.
I'm waiting for my man with my car.
Your man has been waiting for some time, my lord.
Has he? Well, it's a lovely afternoon. Tell him to wait a little longer.
Yes, my lord.
I like that fellow.
Why?
I like his insolence.
He was rude to you?
The reverse. I've often been told to go to the devil, but never so pleasantly as he told me to a moment ago.
Oh, dear, dear. I shall dismiss him for that.
Oh, no, please. I ask you not to. I deserve it.
I don't doubt that. May I ask why you stayed after the others had left?
I wanted to ask you something. When you were in London staying at the Ritz last week, I rang you up 5 times, and each time I was told you were out.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. What a shame.
Were you out?
No, each time I was in.
I thought so.
In fact, each time I answered the phone myself and told you I was out.
Ah, that's not true. Your maid answered.
Oh, yes. Oh, no, sir. Mrs. Cheney ain't here, sir. I can't partly say when she'll be in, sir. Mrs. Cheney's habit is most inconstant, sir.
Oh, so that's it. Will you tell me why you played such a trick?
Certainly. I don't care to be alone with you, even on the telephone.
Why not?
It's my only way of paying tribute to your reputation.
Thank goodness. For a moment, I thought you were going to embarrass me by saying you were nervous of me.
Oh, you have the great distinction, Arthur, dear, of being one of the few men in the world I am not nervous of.
I am one of those who don't attract you.
Isn't it odd?
It's disappointing.
I feel that, too.
Tell me, did you learn the art of rebuking people so charmingly from your butler, or did he learn it from you?
Oh, neither. I expect Charles feels the same as I do. If they're going to be insulted, they'll ask him in first.
What do you mean by that?
During the short time you've known me, Arthur, dear, you've made me practically every proposal that a man can make a woman, with the exception of one, marriage.
I suppose that's quite disappointing to a woman who's come all the way from Australia to England with a deliberate intention of marrying...
Arthur, dear, ring the bell, will you?
What for?
Charles knows where your hat is.
Now, wait a minute. I didn't intend to be rude.
Oh, you weren't rude, I assure you. You were only just a little feminine.
Feminine?
You're rather useless, Arthur. You've done nothing. Your epitaph at this moment is only this. He was a good fellow with men and a bad fellow with women.
Now, that's unfair.
Is it? Then will you be an angel and tell me exactly what was in your mind to say to me when you came back here after the others had gone?
I meant to tell you, you were the most attractive woman I have ever known.
Oh, was I?
Actually, I hadn't stopped to think about it.
No, you wouldn't. But you tell me I was and invite me to a little dinner, I suppose.
Exactly. At my flat.
Ah, I know those little dinners, candlelight and silverware gleaming on the table.
The servants dismissed for the evening.
Oh, of course. And 3 cocktails to give me an appetite for something or other. Oh, no, thank you, Arthur.
All right, I was wrong. I beg your pardon. I'll never ask you to dine with me without a couple of bishops.
Thank you.
Maybe I'll reform and be grateful to you. The good woman who pointed the way.
It almost makes one resolve to be a good woman.
Aren't you a good woman?
Not very.
Then what the devil do you mean by talking to me as you have just now?
There's more than one way of not being a good woman, Arthur, dear.
Is there?
Madam.
Oh, yes, Charles.
Madam, I trust you have not forgotten. You are dining at 8:30.
Oh, good heavens, I had forgotten.
I'll go.
I'm afraid you'll have to.
You mean you're relieved that I'll have to.
Well,
but I'll be seeing you this weekend at Mrs. Ebley's.
Oh, you're invited there, too?
Yes, Mrs. Ebley invited me after I found out that you would be there.
I'll show you out, sir.
There's no need. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, Charles, mix me a drink, will you?
Oh, mix me a drink, will you, old girl?
Yes, Charles.
And bring the paper.
All right, Charles. Do you want me to get your slippers, Charles?
Not this evening, Ducky.
Oh, well, here's your drink.
Thank you, my sweet.
You comfortable?
Yes, Dora. Well, you might scratch my back.
All right, all right.
Oh.
There?
Oh, that's fine.
Ah.
Oh, that's fine. Oh, it certainly is good to stop pretending I'm a butler.
Yes, it must be.
So you wangled an invitation from Mrs. Ebley, huh?
Yes, Charles.
Good. The pearl she was wearing must have been worth 20,000.
Yes, just about that, I'd say.
Well, when we bring this off, there isn't any reason why we shouldn't retire. If you want to, Jane.
Not Jane. I've changed it to Fay.
Fay. Oh, delightful. I preferred it.
I'm glad.
How do you like these people, eh, Fay?
Which ones? Lord Elton? I really don't think you should know anybody but me, Mrs. Cheney. There's nobody else good enough for you but me, Mrs. Cheney. Oh, Mrs. Ebley.
Really, Mrs. Cheney, I don't want to hear Lord Elton's speech. He's such a bore. Everybody's such a bore but me and all my delightful friends who will amuse you so this weekend. Oh, no. I'm cruel.
Oh, you're accurate.
No, Charles. Really, Charles.
Yes?
I've been wondering whether I should send my regrets to Mrs. Ebley.
What?
Yes, Charles. You see, I don't dislike those people, really. I like some of them very much. And, in consequence, I'm finding it rather distasteful to take Mrs. Ebley's pearls from her.
So you're getting scruples?
Yes, Charles.
Do you really understand it yourself?
No, I don't think I do.
Well, I do. It's simple. You remember why you took up this life in the first place?
Yes, I wanted to improve my position.
Exactly. When I found you in that miserable store behind the stocking counter...
Oh,
and saw the potentialities for high crime that you had, you jumped at the chance to learn because it meant you wouldn't have to be a shop girl any longer.
I know.
It meant you could become respectable.
Yes, Charles, yes.
I've known your weakness for respectability all along.
I know.
All through those months of working together... I knew you cared for nothing except that you might become a lady.
Right.
I knew you wouldn't stick with me for a moment if I tried to make love to you.
Right.
You wouldn't stick if I were a common burglar.
No, that's true, Charles.
Well, you're a snob.
I know. I can't help it.
You want to be a lady?
Yes, more than anything.
Well, it's impossible to be a lady without money.
I know.
Well, then.
Well, I still don't want to steal those pearls, Charles.
That's because you're falling in love with Lord Arthur Dilly.
No, no.
Oh, yes. You fence with him, you toy with him, you put him off. But never far enough off so that he won't come back. That's true, isn't it?
Yes, Charles, it's true.
Courage, my sweet. He's not for you. You'll go to Mrs. Ebley's, and let's face it, he'll make love to you.
No.
Let him, if you want, but keep it gay.
Gay?
Yes. You'll want to get serious. You'll want to confess to him who you are.
No, no.
Oh, yes. And that will be the danger signal.
Right.
When you want to tell him who you are, what you do, that's the time, Fay, to leave him and go snitch the pearl.
Oh, but Charles. Charles, I suddenly hate this profession I'm in.
There's one way of getting out of it.
Taking the pearl.
Taking the pearl.
All right, Charles. I'll pinch the pearls. I do so want to be respectable.
You are listening to The Last of Mrs. Cheney by Frederick Lonsdale, produced by the Theatre Guild on the Air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. George Hicks will not be with us for the next few weeks due to a minor operation. During his convalescence, Mr. Hicks has asked Gordon Fraser, with whom he was so closely associated overseas as war correspondent, to report for him. So here is Gordon Fraser speaking for United States Steel.
Good evening. I'm happy to be pinch hitting for my very good friend and fellow radio reporter, George Hicks. And I'm proud, as I know he would be, of tonight's opportunity to tell you a little about how United States Steel is helping physically handicapped war veterans find jobs for which they're best suited. Long before the end of the war, a survey was made in the plants of U.S. Steel to determine the types of jobs on which injured veterans might be safely and productively employed. Thousands of jobs were studied in relation to a list of common war disabilities, studied by a specially appointed working committee from each plant department under the leadership of plant safety directors. Thanks to this kind of long-range planning, U.S. Steel today has an outstanding program for helping disabled veterans. Let me give you just one typical example of how this program works. When Melvin Lyons of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, left to join the Army, he was a craneman in a rolling mill department of Carnegie, Illinois, largest subsidiary of the United States Steel Corporation. When he came back, he had a badly injured knee joint from a shrapnel wound received in battle overseas. His wounded knee was too stiff for him to do the climbing a craneman must do, so now he's handling the important and responsible job of making hourly chemical analysis of water used in steam boilers. 2 months of specialized training were required to fit him for the job, but it was time well spent for him, for the company, and for the community in which he and his family live. Yes, the story of Mel Lyons is typical of the way United States Steel is helping physically handicapped war veterans find the jobs they can fill with pride. It's typical, too, of the spirit behind U.S. Steel's overall program of jobs for veterans. Today, approximately 1 out of every 4 of its 275,000 employees is a war veteran. And U.S. Steel believes there are no better men for the business of making steel, better steels, and better products of steel for you, the American consumer.
We pause now for station identification.
KECA, Los Angeles.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel.
And now the curtain rises on the second act of The Last of Mrs. Cheney by Frederick Lonsdale, starring Gertrude Lawrence as Mrs. Cheney and featuring Ralph Forbes as Charles and Bramwell Fletcher as Lord Arthur Dilling. Well, the weekend is underway with a quiet game of bridge. The players sitting around Mrs. Ebley's bridge table are Lord Dilling, Lady Maria Frinton, and Mr. and Mrs. Willie Wyndham. Well-bred Londoners with well-modulated voices.
You idiot, you revoked.
I did not.
Of course he didn't revoke.
He did.
Yes, the peaceful game goes on. And as the players finish out the game, Mrs. Ebley sits in her easy chair doing needlework. At the piano, Lady Joan Houghton plays. Finally, the bridge game stops. The piano playing is about to stop, too.
Joan, will you cut out that racket?
Oh, what a divine night. How I'd love to be out in that exquisite garden, being told by someone I was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen.
Who would you like to be told that by in particular, Mariah?
Well, I shouldn't care, Joan, darling, as long as it was a man and I was told it. Are you, doing anything for a few moments, Arthur?
I am, but Willie isn't.
Oh, come and make love to me in the garden, Willie.
No, I'd rather sit here and smoke.
Pig.
Any signs of the young lovers?
Not a sign, Joan, not a sound.
And they've been out there at least half an hour.
My dear, I'm so excited I can't bear it. Does this mean that Mrs. Cheney comes back into this room, the future Lady Elton?
Does it necessarily follow, Mariah? Because two people stay out in a garden alone for half an hour, that they should return engaged to be married?
No two people ever stayed alone in a beautiful garden on a beautiful night like this without something happening.
And as it's Elton, I say that it's marriage.
But why Elton? I should have thought you knew more about the geography of gardens than Elton, Arthur.
I suggested that to her myself. It didn't work.
Arthur, darling, I'm going to ask you a question.
Am I in love with Mrs. Cheney?
Oh, how did you know?
Because it has been evident, Mariah, that you have been going to ask me that ever since we arrived in this house 2 days ago.
And are you?
Well, as everyone is expected to contribute something to a weekend party, my contribution is this. I am in love with Mrs. Cheney.
Oh, do you like it?
Of course he likes it.
Why should I tell you whether I like it or not when the woman I love may at any moment return into this room engaged to someone else?
Ruddy sporting of you to confess this way.
Well, it's the first thrill I've had since that nice man made a pass at me in the railway carriage.
How did he make out?
Hello, everybody.
Oh, hello, Elton.
Indoors on a divine night like this. Shame on you all.
Then why did you come in?
Mrs. Cheney has a very bad headache.
Who can blame her?
I'm all right, really.
Then perhaps you and I can go out into this divine night of yours and you can show me the garden.
Oh, no, you don't.
Well, Elton, wouldn't you volunteer to conduct a tour?
Well,
if you would, and you would if people wanted you to, wouldn't you, Elton?
Why, of course, I do.
Joan, you want to see the garden, don't you?
Well, I
knew you did, Mrs. Winton.
Yes,
that makes two of you. Mariah?
I'll aid and abet you, Arthur.
Mrs. Ebley, put away that needlework and let Lord Elton show you the garden.
But it's her garden.
Well, she has to check on her gardeners, doesn't she? Doesn't she? Come on, Willie. You too.
I'm going to sit right here and smoke.
Willie, you're my guest. And you must enjoy yourself in the garden. Come along.
No,
let's go.
Well, come on, Arthur.
Oh, no. I couldn't leave Mrs. Cheney alone.
Oh, I say, I...
Come along, Lord Elton.
Don't hurry back.
No, we won't, Arthur, dear. We won't.
Rather obvious, aren't you?
Yes, I wear my heart on my sleeve.
Mm. Well, I'm going to play the piano.
Pray do. Engaged?
Talking to me.
I don't see anybody else.
Sorry, I didn't quite catch what you said.
I asked if you were engaged.
Any particular thing you would like me to play for you?
No, thank you. Tell me, have you really a headache?
More than ever now.
Isn't piano playing rather bad for it?
The reverse. It soothes it.
And soothes Elton, too.
Now, what do you mean by that?
If you are playing the piano, it's obvious to him that you are not doing anything else.
And it should be obvious to you that I don't want to do anything else.
Move over.
If you like. But I shall go on playing.
My hand on your shoulder won't bother your playing, will it?
It won't even bother my emotions.
Perhaps around your waist, then.
Oh, you must be very uncomfortable.
I would be if I had to hold this position for long. Let's try this way.
Oh, Arthur.
All right, but you're going to turn towards me soon,
oh,
Faye.
Oh, no.
Yes, your hands are going to slip from those keys and your eyes are going to be full of wonder, Faye.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no. Your approach is far too direct. You leave me nothing to wonder about.
You're clever, but I don't think you're untouchable.
You shouldn't, since you are touching me.
A clever woman like you will never marry Elton.
What makes you think I have a chance to?
You see, I have bothered your emotions, after all.
I'm sick of your talking about Lord Elton. Why are you so interested in whether I marry him?
Obvious. I'm in love with you myself.
From anyone else, that would mean a proposal of marriage.
If you like.
You mean if you have to.
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. I'll marry you if I have to. I've got to do something. I'm unhappy when I'm not with you. I'm unhappy when I am. I can see nothing but you when you're present and nothing but you when you're away. I'm sick. I've got it worse than any of God's creatures ever had it before. Yes, I'll marry you, Faye.
You make marriage sound like a little liver pill.
You don't like me.
No, I like being single.
All right, then let's be single together. Now, look, Faye, you're a clever woman, and I'm...
Yes, experienced.
Well, yes, we could get along. I think you like me, Faye.
Yes, I do.
Well?
There are things you don't know about me, Arthur.
What things? Tell me now, so that I can forget them forever.
Oh, I'd like to tell you. Arthur, what would you say if you knew that I...
Go on.
Oh, no. Charles was right. He said I'd want to tell.
What are you talking about?
Never mind. I'm going to leave you. I have to go upstairs. I'll see you later.
But, Faye!
Why, I beg your pardon, sir.
Oh, Charles. What are you doing here at Mrs. Ebbers?
I brought something for my mistress, sir.
She isn't feeling well. She's gone upstairs. I'll see that she gets it, though.
Well,
You know, every time I see you, Charles, I try to remember...
Yes, sir?
Nothing. What was it you wanted me to give to Mrs. Cheney?
A cable came for her, and I thought I'd better bring it over. I have also enclosed some letters that have come for her in this parcel, my lord.
I'll see that she gets it.
Well, I hate to trouble you.
No trouble at all.
Well, good night, sir.
Good night, Charles. Well, 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 so that's it, eh?
Hello, Arthur. I said, hello, Arthur.
Oh, what? Oh, hello, Joan.
What's the matter with you?
I'm sorry, Joan. I was just remembering.
Remembering? What?
Something that makes me extremely interested in this package. And I think the contents of this package would be very interesting, too, don't you, Joan?
Well, then why don't you open it and see what they are?
That's just what I'm going to do. Well, just as I thought.
But there's nothing in it.
Exactly. No letters, no cables. Just a penciled message. Courage, my sweet.
Is there supposed to be something interesting about that?
Oh, yes. Let me tell you a story, Joan. Some years ago, there was a crook who lived at the same hotel in Monte Carlo that I did. No one knew he was a crook, and everyone liked him because he was, well, rather amusing. One day, he was, as it were, caught in the act. Everybody started to chase him. And as I could run faster than the rest, it amused me to run in the opposite direction to my crook friend. With the result, they all followed me, and he got away.
It's a very dull story, and I don't see what it has to do with that blasted package.
And you're not going to see, Joan, because I'm not going to tell you.
But...
And believe me, I'm not going to stay here and talk about it. I've got business upstairs. Nice pearls, aren't they, Faye?
Oh! Arthur, what are you doing here?
Locking the door.
Arthur, what do you mean by this?
I believe the pearls should be placed in this box before you hand them over to the estimable Charles.
Oh.
Yes, Faye.
Unlock this door. Unlock this door or I'll break it down.
Well, why don't you? If you want them to know who you really are, there's a bell over there. Ring it.
Oh,
I do hope you'll believe me when I tell you I sympathize with you very much.
You mean it being locked in a room with you alone?
On that, I feel like congratulating you.
Oh.
I meant you nearly made such fools of us all. It seems a pity not to have allowed you to complete it.
How did you find out?
I recognized your... Just what is Charles to you, by the way?
My butler.
I mean, in his spare time.
My butler. How did you recognize him?
I saved him from jail once.
Oh, you couldn't see your way to making a habit of it.
I've always had a horror of... doing the same thing twice. By the way, where is Charles at this moment?
He's underneath...
Underneath this window, waiting for the pearls. You know, Faye, I'm in a position to give you and Charles your freedom.
I don't think I want it enough to pay your price.
But I've never mentioned it.
Perhaps you'd mention it now.
You remember we talked once about a dinner at my apartment?
I remember you promised you'd have two bishops there.
I'm sorry, the bishops couldn't make it.
Neither can I.
Faye, I think you can.
When?
Right now.
Impossible.
I think not. You see, my dear, this room is fortunately situated.
What?
The back stairs are close by. Huh? Now, my proposal is...
Your proposal is probably a proposition.
My proposal is that I unlock the door and then grip your arm firmly.
What?
The two of us will go down those back stairs, get into my car, and go to my place for that dinner.
If I understand you rightly, if I agree, you say nothing.
Exactly. And just so that you'll believe me...
What are you doing?
I'm just going to warn Charles so that he can get away.
Hey, is that you, Faye?
Hello, Charles.
Good evening, sir.
Still playing the part of a butler, Charles?
Yes, sir. Still playing the part of a gentleman, sir?
I'm gentleman enough to warn you to run for it.
Where's Faye?
She's all right.
Run, Charles.
You've been found out?
Yes, run! I mean, run.
Not without you, Faye.
She'll be all right.
I'll be all right.
I don't believe it.
Yes, Charles, I will. Arthur is protecting me.
Can I count on that?
You can count on it, Charles.
Well,
I'll see you at home, Charles.
All right. Courage, my sweet.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Well, Faye?
Well?
You know, Faye, even with the knowledge of who you are, I still adore you.
Is that an offer of marriage, or are you just being broad-minded?
I hate marriage.
Oh, then I must be content that you still adore me.
Yes.
I should like to think, though, that you were a little disappointed in me.
Your life is your own.
Fine. Then I don't have to go to that little dinner, do I?
Your life is your own after that little dinner.
And if I refuse?
I shan't let you refuse.
Now, you know, that isn't flattering. Tonight you paid me the supreme compliment of asking me to be your wife. I wonder if it would interest you to know what that compliment meant to me. I wonder if it would interest you to know that that is the only compliment I'd ever want from you. The only compliment I'd ever accept from you.
Oh, quite a pose.
You don't believe me.
What a fool you'd think I was if I did.
Arthur, what do you think I'd say if it weren't true?
It's just a trick of yours to make me sentimental,
no.
To make me open that door, so that you can make a fool of me again. No, I'm sorry, Faye.
Hey, keep your hands off me.
Just a kiss before we leave.
No! Never! There!
Faye, what are you going to do?
I'm going to beat on this door.
Stop it! Stop it! Don't you realize they'll all come rushing into this room?
You bet I do.
What did you do that for?
To give you an opportunity to tell them the truth about me and only the truth.
You fool!
I had to be a fool in one way or the other, and I prefer this way. Who's in there?
What's the matter in there?
Who's in there? What's the matter?
It's all right, Mrs. Ebley.
Is that you, Arthur? What are you doing in my room?
So,
what's the matter?
It's all right. I had a scare, but it's all right. Now go away, won't you? I'll come downstairs in a minute.
Mrs. Ebley! Mrs. Ebley!
Mrs. Cheney, is that you? Are you in there with Arthur?
Lord Elton!
Open the door at once, Billy.
All right, I'll open it.
Well, what's going on in here?
Now, what is the explanation of all this?
Mrs. Ebley, Lord Dilling has something to tell you.
What is it, Arthur?
What is it, Arthur? Do you hear?
Would you prefer that I tell them?
Arthur, do you understand? I insist.
I'm sure you'll all understand if I simply say to Mrs. Cheney that I apologize.
But this is terrible. Mrs. Cheney, you'll remember I told you the type of man he was.
You leave my house immediately, Arthur.
Of course.
Dilling, I for one will, and I hope every decent person in the world will cut you.
Everybody should cut him except the insurance company. They should love him.
What do you mean?
Mrs. Ebley, your pearls are in this room.
Well, I know that. What of it?
I mean, I came here to... Well, Arthur found me with your pearls.
What?
You mean you were going to...
Yes.
Oh, there must be some mistake.
None.
Then you're a thief?
I tried my best to...
Well, I don't know what to say.
We'd better send for the police.
No, not until morning. I have to think.
Whatever you say.
Now, don't speak to me, young woman. I'm going to lock you in this room until the police get here.
Oh, no. Why don't you...
Oh, yes, Mrs. Ebley. Lock me in my room. Alone, if you please.
You are listening to The Last of Mrs. Cheney by Frederick Lonsdale, produced by the Theatre Guild on the Air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here speaking for United States Steel is Gordon Fraser.
As I speak to you now, I'm on the stage of the Vanderbilt Theatre on West 48th Street in New York. And yet you can hear my voice in your home, though I may be 3,000 miles from you. That's the everyday miracle of radio. I speak into this microphone. My voice is turned into electrical impulses which race along wires to the control booth here in the Vanderbilt Theater. And here they're switched to the main cables of the American Broadcasting Company, which fan out over the continent. The impulses travel for, perhaps hundreds of miles across the country on a cable until they reach your local station. There, they're amplified and sent shooting out into the air from the transmitting tower. And then they go to your aerial, through the wires to your receiver, through the selector and the tubes, which amplify them again, and on your speaker, which turns them back into my voice. All this happens before you can count one. And in every step of that process, from my microphone to your loudspeaker, steel is vitally important. Literally hundreds of different things necessary to radio are made from steel. If you look into your radio, you'll be able to see steel parts there. And if you look at the transmitting tower of your local station, the next time you pass, you'll find that is steel, too. Steel is just as important to radio as it is to automobiles and railroads, to farmers and manufacturers. And United States Steel plays an important part in supplying the steel that radio needs. The members of the United States Steel family know how to make steel that fills every requirement. In their hands, steel is the most versatile of all metals. Whether it's a tiny wire for a tube or a tower 200 feet high, United States Steel makes the metal that will fill the requirements. So you'll find USS Steel used throughout radio, and especially in the fine new post-war receiving sets now on the market. Making steel for use in radio is just one more of the many jobs done by the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation.
And now the curtain rises on the third act of The Last of Mrs. Cheney, starring Gertrude Lawrence as Mrs. Cheney, and featuring Ralph Forbes as Charles and Bramwell Fletcher as Lord Arthur Dilling.
Are you all right, Faye?
But Mrs. Cheney doesn't answer Lord Dilling and finally goes away. After all, Mrs. Ebley has locked her in a room. It's night in Mrs. Ebley's home. Everyone is thinking of Mrs. Cheney. Everyone is concerned with the fact that she's a thief. And everyone is reacting in his own fashion. The women's reaction.
And to think in the morning.
Now shut up, all of you.
Lord Elton's reaction.
Oh, dear.
Willie Winton's reaction. And so it goes through the night until dawn comes, bringing with it a problem to be faced and a breakfast to be left untouched. The first ones on hand to leave breakfast untouched are Mrs. Ebley, Mariah, and Lord Elton.
Oh, I give it up. I simply give it up. Elton, what do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I've no idea. I'm defeated.
You love her very much?
Yes. No. How can one love a woman of that description very much?
I quite agree. And the way she trapped me into taking her up.
I've been thinking about that for hours.
Well, we won't have to trouble with Charles. He arrived here early this morning and gave himself up. It's this woman. Our duty, of course, is to send her to jail with him.
No. That's impossible. Think of my position in this matter. President of a bank. President of the Lifeboat Institution, director of a bank, chairman of various societies for the protection of unhappy women.
We know, Lord Elton.
A man who has regularly contributed to the Times on all questions of social reform, even subjects of religion. If it became known that I'd asked this woman to be my wife, will you tell me what subjects I'll be able to write to the Times about?
But after all, it's only her word against yours. You could deny having ever asked her to be your wife.
Well... The revolting thing of it all is, I cannot.
Why?
Well, being inexperienced, I put my proposal in writing.
Oh, my dear, how terrible for you.
Oh, poor lamb. I see it's going to be very difficult for you. Who knows, perhaps expensive.
It was a letter teeming with affection and sentiment. It took me days to write it. Dilling says the cinema rights of it alone are worth £10,000.
Oh, how dreadful. I am sorry for
a great pity. A great pity.
And that's not all. It pains me as much to tell you this as it will pain you to hear it, but I must be frank with you. It will make a breach between us all, but it's my duty to tell you. In that letter, I wrote my personal opinion of you all.
You...
Do I understand that you have put on paper anything which might sound in the least disparaging about me?
Or me?
As I intended to marry her, she being an Australian, I thought it my duty to point out to her the people I should like her to know or not, as the case might be.
Am I to understand we are among the not?
Yes.
How dare you?
What are you doing in this house now?
Unhappily, the answer to that is in the letter, too. I explained to her that I had never visited Mrs. Ebley before. And the only reason I was doing so now was because she was going to be there. Pass the coffee, please.
And I'm to sit here and be insulted like this?
How did Arthur Dilling see this letter?
We were up late talking last night. Fortunately, being a businessman, I kept a copy of the letter. Dilling says if it were his letter and he were her, he wouldn't sell it for £25,000.
Oh, this is too terrible.
How do I appear in this letter?
Not well, I fear. Here, I have my carbon copy. There is the unhappy paragraph I wrote about you.
Mariah is a... Lou, some principled, immoral woman in every way undesirable for you to know.
Well, you must get the original of this letter back, do you understand?
At once.
Dilling says he bets she won't give it back. He thinks she'll insist on having it read in the police court.
A police court?
Well, it seems to me, instead of putting this woman in jail where she ought to be, we'll all of us have to go down on our knees with thousands of pounds begging her to keep out of it.
Elton, what is it Arthur Dilling tells me that you've written to Mrs. Cheney about my wife?
I'm sorry, Winton, very sorry, but I must tell you the truth. I said that it was evident to me she preferred always to be with some other man than her husband.
What?
And though I could understand it, I could not condone it.
Why? She'd rather be with me than any man.
I'm sure she would. All I mentioned was she never was.
Good morning, everyone.
Except you, Elton.
Good morning, Joan. You know about this letter?
Yes. It seems, darling, I'm the foulest-tongued woman in England. I can't open my ruddy mouth without swearing. And lots more.
Now, look here, Elton. Are you prepared to withdraw the suggestions you've made against us?
They are not suggestions. They are facts. What possible comfort could you derive from my withdrawing something all of you know to be true?
Help! I'm going to have a fit.
Good morning.
Oh, Arthur, good morning. What are you?
I have the distinction of being one of the most unmitigated blackguards walking about this earth.
Arthur, this is a dreadful position to be put in by this man.
As an optimist, I take the gravest view of it.
What are we going to do with this woman?
Let us be accurate. What is this woman going to do with us?
Oh, how true. How true.
Let us throw ourselves upon her mercy and buy the letter back.
Yes, and Elton pays for it.
Right, Willie. All those in favor?
Yes.
Carried unanimously. Shall I settle the figure, Elton, or will you?
Well, I'm not a rich man, Dilling.
In this situation, you can't afford to be a poor one.
And now, see here, Elton, you will pay what you have to pay.
Yes, you certainly will.
And now for the showdown. Shall I fetch the criminals?
Yes, Arthur.
It will be a pleasure. May I announce Mrs. Chaley and her butler?
Guilty, my lord.
Ha-ha! You admit it!
Silence. Won't you take a chair?
Thank you. As Charles was born a gentleman, may he not sit down as well?
Why, yes, of course. Take a seat, Charles.
No, thank you, Dilling.
Well, we were sent for.
Yes, I will be brief, Mrs. Cheney. The position is as follows. You have acknowledged frankly that in accepting Mrs. Ebley's invitation to stay here, it was for the purpose of taking Mrs. Ebley's pearls.
Yes, or anything else that happened to be lying about.
That is very frank. The penalty for such things is considerable.
Very considerable.
Charles and I think that with charm of manner, we may get off with 3 years.
That, of course, we don't want to happen to you. Lord Elton feels very strongly that if you've once asked a woman to be your wife, it would be ungenerous to treat her so drastically.
Thank you, Lord Elton.
Not at all.
So this is what we've decided. If you will go abroad and accept a small sum. Did you mention the amount, Elton?
£100.
Paid to you on the steamer in return for the letter he wrote to you. We are prepared to consider the matter closed.
Oh. Is it my turn now? I'm very sorry that I cannot accept Lord Elton's kind offer. Charles and I have decided we must go to jail.
We have?
Nonsense. After all, you didn't succeed in getting the pearls.
Precisely. We failed, and that is why we should go to jail. If we'd got them, we would have succeeded, a crime for which no one ever goes to jail.
You put it charmingly, Fadia.
Thank you, my sweet.
Yes, Roberts, what is it?
Inspector Wilkinson has arrived, madam. He says you want to speak to him.
Ask him to wait.
Yes, madam.
You call the police. You see, Mrs. Cheney, we're terribly serious.
Oh, it's your duty to be, Mrs. Ebley.
Well, it seems to me you're very stupid not to accept our good offer instead of being taken away by a policeman.
Not at all. He may be charming. Are you ready, Charles?
Yes, my sweet.
Mrs. Cheney.
Yes, Lord Elton.
I have something to say to you.
Yes, Lord Eldon.
Oh, come and sit down. Isn't it rather bad manners to keep a policeman waiting?
Oh, we were bluffing about the policeman.
Bluffing? But why?
Oh, do stop trying to be so innocent.
Do you know what they mean, Charles?
I'm so young in crime, I must be forgiven. I don't.
Mrs. Cheney, in a moment of impulse, prompted by affection for you, Lord Eldon wrote you a letter asking you to be his wife.
A letter which I will treasure always very much.
Yes, we know that.
I am authorized by Lord Eldon to ask you your charge for the return of that letter.
My charge? Please forgive me, but I don't know what you mean.
The suggestion is that we give you £500 and your passage to Australia.
Which I call very generous.
500. Australia. I don't know that I would like Australia.
But you came from Australia.
No, Brighton.
Oh, come. What do you say for the letter?
I prize the letter so much that I don't think I would part for it for any money you could offer me.
£1,000?
Oh, this is amazing.
Oh, now, come. What is your usual charge for the return of letters?
Well, speaking as one fallen woman to another, there never have been any letters. Come on, Charles, let's not stay here to be insulted.
Yes, Faye, if I had known that they were the type of people they are, I should never have allowed you to come and stay with them.
Oh, please. Wait a minute. We don't mean to insult you.
Well, Lord Eldon.
Where were we?
At the point where £1,000 was bid for the letter.
Which you refused.
Mrs. Cheney, what will you take for it?
I offer £5,000.
Be quiet, Charles.
I'll do nothing of the sort. My money's as good as yours.
Mrs. Cheney, will you please answer my question?
If I sell the letter, I will do so not in the sense of blackmail, but more in the spirit of breach of promise. For, say, £10,000.
It's giving it away.
No, I refuse.
Oh, I'm so glad, because I'd much rather have the letter.
No, Eldon, you have no alternative but to pay.
And I have no sympathy for you.
But Mrs. Cheney, surely...
£10,000, Lord Eldon.
Oh, it's terrible, terrible.
£10,000? Charles, how much would you charge for a course of 12 lessons?
What kind?
I hope you enjoy the spending of it, Mrs. Cheney.
Thank you. I shall do my best.
Here's the check. The letter, please.
We have something in common after all, Lady Maria.
Very little, thank heaven.
Then why pay this money to keep it a secret?
Kindly give Lord Eldon the letter.
Hey.
What are you doing?
She's tearing up the check, by Jove.
Which is exactly what I did with the letter. Here, Lord Eldon, I hope you will find all the pieces of your check.
You've torn the letter up.
Wasn't it stupid of me?
Why, I think it was very generous.
Nonsense. She wouldn't have torn it up if she'd known she'd have been offered that sum for it.
You know, you're never right about anything. I tore it up after Charles had told me it was worth twice that sum.
As I watched her tearing it up, I cried for the first time in 15 years.
Why did you tear it up, Faye?
I'll tell you. Courage I was born with plenty. Decency, they gave me too much.
Decency, indeed. If Lord Dilling hadn't knocked on the door last night, decency wouldn't have prevented you from taking my pearl.
Lord Dilling didn't knock on the door.
What?
Mrs. Cheney did.
Mrs. Cheney did? What do you mean?
Go on. Tell them, Faye.
It will embarrass you.
An unmitigated scoundrel is never embarrassed.
Very well. Mrs. Ebley, if it hadn't been for decency, I might be wearing your pearls or others provided by Lord Dilling.
Charmingly expressed, most touching.
You mean to tell me that you took the risk of being clapped into jail?
She most certainly did.
What? But this means... It means that this thief...
Thief? Well, she may be a thief, but she's the most decent person in this house.
That's true. I took Faye out of a shop. Took her from behind the stocking counter.
The stocking counter? Really?
Now, don't be shocked, Eldon. There are some very fine people behind stocking counters.
But Mrs. Cheney, why did you ever become a thief?
Because I wanted to be a lady.
Touché.
She didn't become a thief. I spent months, taught her all I knew. And then, when we were ready for this job, she backed out. She was too respectable.
Exactly. And just to improve the moral tone of all of us, I suggest she remain in the house for the rest of the weekend.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't go, Charles.
So do I. Everyone wants you to stay.
I've got to go. I'm sorry.
I'm flattered that you wanted me to see you off, too.
Oh, don't be, Arthur.
I just wanted a third person here so that there'd be no emotional scene between Fay and myself.
I think there's going to be one anyway.
No, don't, Fay. Don't cry, my dear. But I'd be terribly sorry if you didn't want to. Goodbye, Fay.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Charles.
Goodbye, Dilling.
Oh, by the way.
Yes?
Here's your gold watch I took from you on Derby Day 5 years ago.
Well, thank you very much, old chap.
Not at all. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Courage, my sweet.
You like him?
I adored him.
Did you love him?
No.
Fay.
What?
What do you think of me?
Oh, I'm grateful to you. You made an honest woman of me.
That proves that most of the things done in this life are unintentional.
I wonder.
Fay.
Yes, Arthur.
I'm sorry those two bishops couldn't have been around last night. But there's one bishop who's waiting for us this morning.
What do you mean?
Well, after you left me last night, I couldn't sleep. So very early this morning, I dressed myself, got out my car, and went to see a friend of mine who is a bishop.
What did you tell him about me?
Why, everything.
And what did he say?
He said, get her, you'll never get another like her.
What a darling he sounds. I'd rather like to meet him.
He asked us to be punctual.
Punctual for what?
Our wedding.
Our wedding?
We have about an hour. Well, Fay.
Do you really think your bishop will like me?
Oh, Fay, darling.
Shh. What's that for?
That's the last of Mrs. Cheney.
Oh, I'm so glad. Oh, I know what that is.
What?
That's the beginning of Lady Dilling.
Fallen on the Theater Guild production of The Last of Mrs. Cheney, presented by the United States Steel Corporation. In just a moment, Roger Pryor will tell you about exciting plays and stars to come. Tonight, Gertrude Lawrence starred as Mrs. Cheney. Ralph Forbes was featured as Charles and Bramwell Fletcher as Lord Arthur Dilling. Willie Winton was played by Philip Tong, Mrs. Winton by Cynthia Latham, George by James Truax, Lady Joanne by Dora Sayers, Lord Elton by Reynolds Evans, Mrs. Elby by Catherine Emmett, and Mariah Frinton by Kathleen Cordell. And here is Roger Pryor to tell you about next Sunday's play.
Next week, ladies and gentlemen, the Theater Guild on the Air brings you the well-known stage and screen star, Lillian Gish. And with her will be John Loder in Kind Lady. Kind Lady was adapted for the stage from Hugh Walpole's story. The radio version to be heard next week shows you the mounting terror and doom that impends when a kind lady is kind to the wrong kind of man. Following the presentation of Kind Lady, the Theater Guild on the Air will bring you the uproarious Broadway and Hollywood comedy success, The Man Who Came to Dinner, starring Fred Allen. In weeks to follow, you'll hear Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne in The Great Adventure, A Bill of Divorcement starring James Mason, Miss Ethel Barrymore in The Corn is Green, The Old Maid, Golden Boy, and other Broadway hits.
Remember, next week, Kind Lady, starring Lillian Gish. And remember, too, that when you see the USS label on any product, it means the steel is good. The Theater Guild on the Air is under the supervision of Teresa Helburn and Lawrence Langer, with Homer Figgett, director, Carol Irwin, production executive, and Amina Marshall, executive director of the radio department. Music was composed and conducted by Harold Levy, and the play was adapted by Robert Senandella. Your announcer, Norman Brokenshire. The United States Steel Corporation hopes that you'll be with us next Sunday at this same time.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.